Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide current educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children, and by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and here with me is Dr. Richard Tooley. A few weeks ago, we did a show on the principles of family leadership, and we've had some interest generated in that show. We'd like to answer some of the specific questions that our listeners have sent in. So welcome, Dr. Tooley in Taiwan. Thank you for joining us virtually.
Well, thank you, and it's a beautiful day here in Taiwan.
It is below zero here in Maryland, so quit bragging. Just be quiet. We are freezing, freezing. In fact, it was so cold that when I took my grandchildren for a little walk, the little creek was frozen solid, and they got to walk on the creek, and that's moving water. Can you believe that? Frozen solid.
It's 18 degrees here, Celsius.
See, I knew you'd just have to put one more little jab in. Well, thank you for joining us, because only you, I think, can answer these questions that our listeners have sent in. They've listened to the topic on principles of family leadership, and no one gets married with a book on family leadership or the principles of it. I mean, I know there's a lot of material on how to be a good husband, how to be a good wife, but really looking at that overarching theme of family leadership is so important. So before we start with some of these questions, do you have anything that you want to say to set the stage?
Yeah, I've been actually studying this for quite a while, because there isn't much that's been written on family leadership. And it seems to me that if we really want to provide a systematic approach to how we handle our families, we need to be thinking early and often about our leadership styles, the leadership methods that we're approaching, and in an overarching theme. We're looking not at 1, 3, and 5 years. We're looking at 10, 15, 20 years in these cases.
I mean, when the questions came in, I couldn't help but think that so many of us want a quick fix. You know, there's problems in our family. We want a quick fix, but it's not that simple. It's the trend. It's the culture you establish as the team. Okay, well, here we go.
All right.
So the first question is, I just need some clarification. Are you saying that the husband and wife should be a team? And what happens when they don't agree on anything?
That's a very good question. Team is what the goal is. That's what the objective is. Now, that requires some thought. Both the husband and wife bring to their marriage certain strengths. And oftentimes, biblically, it's given that the husband is supposed to be the leader in the team. Well, this is where it gets interesting. If a leader chooses to hold all of the power to themselves, you have an autocratic leadership system in which much of the benefits are lost. So it requires that if you are going to have a good leadership process, there's a state of mind that goes on here. And that state of mind says, I don't want to keep all of the leadership to myself. I want to use the strengths of the people around me to make the leadership of my family work better. So I think that in the beginning, if you go by biblical principles, the biblical principles that Paul gives us and other places in the Bible, it tells us that the leadership role is supposed to be the husband's. However, if you take that, the other part of what Paul says, you know, Paul says, wives respect your husbands and husbands love your wives. That illustrates that the husband must give back. And I think if you go clear back to the Garden of Eden did not indicate that the husband had the leadership role as much as it indicated that there was a joint leadership process going on there. And so if we really want to have the best of both the best that there is available, then we're going to have a shared leadership. And I will go further to say that it's not just a shared leadership between the husband and wife. It's a shared family leadership.
Yes, and I love the fact that you went all the way back to the Garden of Eden. We often say that, you know, God created each thing more advanced from one day to the next. You know, first there were plants and then there were animals. These items all sustained what he created next. And then he created man, then he created woman, and then he created the Sabbath. And so that being said, it would really bear that God's ideal would be that this woman who came out of the side of man, not out of his foot or any lower part, but out of the side, would truly be a partner. Now, what happens when nobody agrees on anything? There's usually a bigger problem. I don't know if you can speak to what could possibly be the bigger problem, or maybe it's not a problem so much as how we look at it, because if our spouse is our completer, then the fact that they don't agree on anything actually means that they see things differently, and between the two of you, you should come up with the best decision possible.
Yeah, one of the things that goes with shared leadership, when you start thinking in terms of servant leadership, now I am basing the idea of family leadership heavily on servant leadership. I think servant leadership is the core to it. And that is actually, servant leadership, ironically, is not yet a theory. I mean, they've been working on it for decades and haven't been able to get it to a theory state. The only thing they know is that it works. And that's interesting, is that they have this that works. And so when you take a look at servant leadership, to me, servant leadership is much more about a state of mind than it is any kind of technique or practice or whatever. The practice comes from that state of mind. And that state of mind is basically that as the leader, I am the servant. And I think Jesus illustrated that. There's a story of a group of merchants that were making their way across the desert, and they had as their servant, they had a servant that was helping them with all their camels and everything, and the servant was doing all the work. And one day the servant ended up being abducted by some raiders. From that point on, things went downhill for the merchants. They couldn't find their way across the desert. They couldn't get along with each other. They ended up being stuck in the desert, wandering around it for 3 years. And then one day, the servant was found. And as soon as the servant came back into the group, everything began to run the way it was supposed to run. And they made their way across and ended up where they were supposed to end up. So that illustrates another point of servant leadership. Here, the servant ended up being the leader, but he didn't have the title. So,
yeah, and that in itself could be another whole discussion of positional and permissional leadership. And we did touch on that in our last discussion, our last show. But I want to get to the next question before we go to break. And this is from a listener who says, "Hi, my husband believes that the husband is the head of the house, and I don't mind, except when it comes to his discipline of the children. They get spanked for everything. What would you recommend that I do?"
Well, that's an interesting one, too. And I would hope that at some point the husband realized that as the leader of the house, if he's going to take that title, he also needs to realize that he's a servant and that he needs to listen. The problem with discipline of that nature is that you end up with children in the end of the day or at the end of their life as they get older and move out of the house. You end up with children who do not understand how to be leaders themselves. And so that's one of the major issues that comes with it. And that's one of the things that this theory kind of helps solve. But what she's got to do at this point is, while she recognizes that he is the head of the house, or she wants to say that, she cannot necessarily approach that from that position. Because if she's approaching it from where she's at right there, then she's taking on the position of being not just a servant, but a compromiser. She's in a lose, win-lose situation where he's winning, she's losing, and the children are losing. She needs to be able to talk with him about this much more from a collaborative standpoint. And I believe also bring in material that shows alternate methods of getting the thing done. She has to find out if there's some softness in his mind that will allow him to move away from a one-size-fits-all approach to life and learn. This will be something that she's going to have to pray about. One of the things, though, that must always be there, I believe, is somehow showing a united front to your children, that you two are somehow one. And I think that's an important thing, too. But ultimately, the children will be damaged if you can't find another way to discipline.
Yes, I agree with you. I know that there have been times, especially when my children hit their adolescent stage of maturity, or immaturity probably, I should say, that I was just livid with them. And my husband would say, just relax, you know, let's step back. And was the voice of reason. And sometimes I was the voice of reason in other situations. I think that as a couple, if you realize that both of you can bring balance to that area of discipline of your children and really listen, that the children will do much better, that it's better for them. Because there's times, you know, you might lose your patience. We have to take a break right here. But when we come back, I think that I want to tie in this idea of servant leadership with different cultures. So we'll be right back. Like a little child, the toddler stood looking out at the waves. He seemed mesmerized. As he dashed toward the water, his father followed. As the waves rolled toward him, the toddler ran back. Then he noticed the 2-foot cliff of sand behind him. He ran to it and tried to climb up, but with every tiny foothold, the sand gave way. He tried harder, grabbing the top of the cliff with his hands and then going to another part of the cliff. It was no use. With frustration, he cried and flung himself at the cliff, face into the sand. He wanted up, but how? His father came behind him and carved some steps out of the sand. The toddler still needed his feet guided into the etched steps, and his father held his hands under the toddler's feet to ensure that he would make it to the top. In 2 seconds, the toddler was at the top and running on the smooth plateau of sand with his father running behind him. I watched this spiritual experience between father and son, the toddler's sense of self-accomplishment and the father's amusement. Like a little child, the spiritual journey of infants and toddlers. For more information, go to educationcurrents.org.
You have been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and with me is Dr. Richard Tooley from Taiwan. We're doing it virtually. Praise God for the technology to be able to do this. And we are answering some of the questions we received after a recent show that we did called Principles of Family Leadership. And I wanted to talk about how different cultures could benefit from servant leadership. Now, in my experience, let's start with Jamaican. I have some students that are from Jamaica. I have some students that are from Africa. I have some students that are from Asia, from the Philippines. And every one of those cultures really look at disciplining children differently. My family's from Jamaica. They get spanked a lot. And the children say, well, we get spanked a lot because in my parents' country, where they come from, that's how they raise children. And they seem to accept it. And then, American children are going, oh, ouch, oh, I don't think I've ever gotten a spanking. Or they'll say, I've got a spanking once. You know, it's just a totally different culture. So tying in the question that we had earlier about the children getting spanked for everything and servant leadership, now let's kind of transition about into cultures. Tell me a little bit about the family culture of the Taiwan people.
Okay, the Taiwan people have a very interesting culture. Clearly, in most cases, it is a male-dominated society. And I don't mean that it is men are necessarily abusive or whatever, but it's the desire that the family have a boy. The boy is the one that's going to take over the family role. The boy is going to end up inheriting the business. And girls are to prepare themselves for marriage. And that's pretty much the culture that I find here. Now, that doesn't mean that girls are put down or considered somewhat, you know, treated abusively. But clearly, if you are a family that doesn't have a boy, then there's something that's not really happy in that family. And these kinds of things in a culture, I have a hard time warring against, even though I personally don't consider them right, because changing culture can be a devastating and a dangerous thing to do too rapidly. It takes time to change culture. But as far as now, when you start looking at the punishment or of children, and in some cultures it is to spank, and in other cultures it's not to, I believe that this is kind of where it comes down to an individual choice. You know, biblically, people take the Bible support of spare the rod, spoil the child type thing, and that becomes the go-to phrase. But, you know, when you consider Kohlberg's hierarchy of moral development, for example, in the beginning, a spanking might be an appropriate thing. And I'm not talking about, let's go to the woodshed, use a razor strap and wail the tar out of someone. But sometimes with a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old, one swat will shake them out of their mental trajectory and move them back into a position where you can actually have a conversation with them as much as you can have one with a 2 or 3-year-old. But there's a point where do this, get that has to move through the different phases of moral development. And it should be the goal of the parents to move their children through those phases of moral development to the phase where they do what's right because that's what's right to do. And I don't think you get there by using corporal punishment all the way up. I think you have to get there by moving toward conversation, moving toward dialogue, moving toward giving the child the room to make decisions as they get older and get into the ages where those decisions could be made. You know, I know that in my life, when my children were young, my goal that I stated before they were born is that by the age of 16, I wanted them to be able to make positive choices on their own without me around, because anything could happen to me. And so that's what I kept in front of me for my entire time with them. Now they're out of their teens, and they're off, graduated from college now, and they're doing fine. They're able to make decisions on their own. And I think that's what, in regardless of the culture, that's what people need to start thinking of. And if you're young now and starting with your children, you need to recognize the steps through which Kohlberg goes. You need to keep in mind the servant leadership, that the role of the parents, the role of the father, the role of the mother, and ultimately, ironically, if you keep that role in mind, then it becomes the role of the children too, by their own choice.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, once you get this idea of servant leadership, now everybody is contributing to the well-being of the family, and you end up then with a real team, And you allow children to take on leadership roles as they are capable of taking on those roles. You know, that's a real tough one for parents.
Yes.
To be able to abdicate certain responsibilities to their children, you know, where those children are able to do those things as good or better than the parents, let them do it. Don't expect to have to always lead in every situation.
Yes.
And, you know, you move the children. Every time you give that child that ability, you affirm them. And that child then is able to be much more self-confident and is willing to take on more responsibility and is willing to contribute more. So you end up with a synergy there. And I think you end up with a much healthier family that goes on for decades after the children grow up.
Yeah, and as you're talking, I'm going through all of the leadership theories that I can think of, like the great man and transformational, facilitative, all of the different theories. I think servant leadership comes the closest to be able to transcend cultural differences.
Yeah, it does. I've gone through most of those theories, and there's some theories that I keep with this, like team-based leadership. Okay, team-based leadership and servant leadership, the research has shown that the two of them go very well together. I mean, they're a hand-in-hand thing. That teams function better under servant leadership than they do under any other type of leadership theory. And I think then one of the other theories that I would probably throw in there and keep around would be Bowman and Diehl's, you know, leadership frames, because there's a certain contingency process. You know, contingency theory plays in there, and there's a certain contingency process that needs to go on. If, for example, you come into a family emergency, then someone has to take a very strong role quickly in that kind of a situation and handle it. And I'm talking about a dire emergency.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about, you know, if so in that case, then someone must take on that role of leadership and be very directive.
Yes.
So that's different. But in the day-to-day, looking at it over the long term, still, even in that point when that person must take that authority to themselves and be very directive, they must keep in mind that they are a servant in this process. And overarching this thing, you keep that servant leadership model. And I think Bowman and Diehl's leadership frames helps in many ways to do this. And I think it's worth it because in your toolbox of leadership material, you want to be able to teach your young people all of these different skill sets that are highlighted in Bowman and Diehl's leadership frames. But overarching, you're going to keep the servant leadership model in place.
Well, we've actually come to the close of the show, and now I want to talk much longer on Bowman and Diehl because that's kind of getting into my wheelhouse. But the takeaway for me is that, you know, families that pray together and really think about how to lead their families, they will stay together. And then those children, when they go out, they are prepared to lead their own families. Thank you so much, Dr. Tooley, for spending this time with us. And I have one last thing to say, and that is keep learning.
You have been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.